The Tacit Conspiracy. This talk is based on the book The Tacit Conspiracy by Eugene Halliday. Let us first consider the Tacit Conspiracy in its absolute application. Before the conspiracy comes into effect, the absolute sentient power has to be considered as an equable ocean of light, which contains within its equilibration all possibilities whatever. But it is in a real sense a nothing, precisely because there is no thing within it. A thing is a concrete object with boundaries and an identity function within that boundary. But the absolute before creation has no boundaries or enclosures because there is as yet no difference within its infinity. So before creation, this absolute ocean of power has no values, no judgments or realizations whatever within itself, because it has no object on which to focus its all-seeing eye. It is alone or all one. The absolute eye which gazes into an infinite no-thing with no object upon which to exercise its power and nothing for its sentience to know. The absolute sentient power feels within its infinite the potentialities of all things, the possibilities of creation. It experiences this feeling of potentiality as a yearning to develop and objectify the possibilities of its being. We experience such a feeling when we're invaded by a divine discontent, often brought about by music, a painting, or some such experience which calls forth in us a desire to do something creative. We experience it often in relation with someone we love, when we want to help them in some way to show our feelings for them. This yearning in the absolute is love. To love in this sense means to develop the potential of a being. This is why God is called love in the Bible. He who develops the great egg of potentiality. But the absolute sentient power cannot develop without difference. Only by creating difference can we get comparison. All value judgments are based on difference and comparison. And difference can only be created by bringing in the idea of boundaries and limits. This is what Eugene means when he says in the soliloquy from the cross that God stretched himself upon a macrocosmic cross. An act of creation is a self-opposition, an arcing back upon oneself in order to cross one's own line of force and make an enclosure. We might express this free, flowing ocean of light of infinity as a moving force which never crosses itself and therefore never creates because it doesn't have an opposition within itself created by the crossing over of its lines of force. The same sort of idea is experienced in the quotation that Kate and Nan are opposites, Kate being the KT function, the crossing function, and Nan being the undulating serpent-like movement which never crosses over and fixes itself. This untrammeled moving spirit, the Nan, is expressed in speech by the letter H, the sound made by the uninterrupted passage of air through the bronchial tubes and out of the mouth. Breath, out-breathing, is one of the oldest symbols of the spirit. In order to develop its potential, this free power, this must make a circumscription, a self-binding, or, as Eugene puts it in the Defense of the Devil, God opposes himself with himself. This is the first act of creation, the making of a finited zone within the absolute sentient power, the creation of an object. It is as if the mouth were to close upon the out-breathing as it issued forth. And this turns the out-breathed H, the sound, into M. The breath doesn't alter, but by the closure at the mouth and the vocal cords, a difference is produced. We add body to the sound. By this act of closure, the absolute created a womb, a house of being, a great mother. This compacting by the absolute upon itself brings into being what the scholars called the prima materia, the first substance or mother, mater being the Latin for mother. So the absolute has brought into being the substance which will bear the imprint of the forms which his initiating power will press into the materia. The absolute now has something which will reflect back to his eye the image of himself. The absolute has an object, a meaning. It's called the counterstroke, the opposition point which is symbolized by the cross. And this counterstroke, this crossing, this opposition, is the essential of creation. the absolute now works within this substantial sphere to realize the potentialities within it. This in-working within a sphere is the only meaning of inertia. The inertia of a substance means the in-working of the spirit in that place, in that limited enclosure. Now let us observe that the Absolute has set up an appearance in its infinity, an apparently separate object. It cannot be truly separate because the Absolute has brought it into being within itself. Within him we live, work, and have our being. There is no outside of absolute infinity. It's a sphere or zone kept in being by the concentration of the absolute power upon it. If the Creator relaxed his concentration in that place, then that place would cease to be. Its stress would be removed, and it would go back to the ocean of non-difference. This is the answer to the deist philosophy. The absolute sentient power has conspired with itself to behave as if it were two. This is the origin of the concept of paradox. It has two aspects: the free, non-bounded, and therefore non-inertic power which initiated the closure, and an inert or in-working sphere of substance. With the initiating power is associated the power of formulation or reasoning, and with the substance is associated the sentience which feels the awareness of its own being. Thus the absolute conspires to behave as if it is two: the active and the passive, the initiating and the receptive poles of being. It's a tacit conspiracy because nobody talks about it. Why then is it necessary to speak about it now? Precisely because it is no longer being observed in its proper sense. The identification of man, which results from the original identification of the absolute with the first limitation, has blinded him to his source. By identification with his polar male function, man has limited his awareness. He cannot see the whole because he's identified with the part. So he's concentrated on initiative and reason, and has suppressed his awareness of his internal woman, the sentience and the substance of his own being. Man's internal state is reflected in the world outside him. He has suppressed those things outside him, those beings outside him, who have elected to stress the female pole of the tacit conspiracy. Historically, man has dominated women by his superior initiative and form, and he's come to scorn her because he regards her as inferior. He's forgotten that for the purpose of the tacit conspiracy, it is essential that one pole should elect to be receptive, to be the feeling and the substance in which the absolute imprints itself. Without substance upon which to act, man's initiative and form is mere fantasy, unreal, an airy nothing. He is rejecting what the absolute knows, that initiating spirit must have a resistance, a point of opposition which feels his impact and, by opposition, makes it real to him. The free initiating power is the positive, or the H, and the inertic mass is the negative, or the M. The working of the H in the M to produce form and images is called L. And this is the Holy Trinity of Christian theology, the Holy Family. Initiating power, receptive substance, and the articulation of forms within the substance. That's Father, Mother, and Son, or Logos. And this is why it is said that unless one has one's H, one's M, and one's L properly balanced, one will never gain the humility, which is the prerequisite of reflexive self-consciousness. This, then, is the beginning of the tacit conspiracy initiated by the Absolute for the development of its potentiality. This teaching is the most basic fundamental truth which can be expressed. It's essential to understand it if we are to fulfill the purpose of God in creating the world and man. We are developments in time of the infinite forms of the Absolute, creations of the will to self-knowledge of the Creator. The full objectification of this absolute will brought to fruition in a concrete form we call a reflexively self-conscious man. Now, reflexive self-consciousness, or RESEC for short, is impossible without a full comprehension of the meaning of the tacit conspiracy. Christ makes it quite clear that the RESEC man, the idea of RESEC, is so vast a concept, its implications so wide, that it can be gained only after passing through the uttermost trial the human spirit can endure. Thus one wouldn't expect the tacit conspiracy to be all sweetness and light. After all, the course of true love, or development, never did run smooth. But development is only possible through the acceptance of pain. That is the meaning of the cross. Let's see how the tacit conspiracy manifests itself in time. In the substance of the earth we call our mother, we see the passive, receptive materia again, the ground which the father tills and sows and breaks and builds in the cycle of the seasons. The light and power of the sun is the tangible expression of the father's initiating male power. When it's high in summer, the earth smiles and gives forth her abundance. When the sun in winter is low, the earth goes dark and quiet, like a woman without the presence and stimulus value of man. But in all the branching out of the forms of the infinite expressed in time, none is so complex as man. Man is the crown of creation, differentiated from the lowlier forms of life by his supreme ability to reason and to express himself in a rich vocabulary. According to the poets and philosophers, man is made in the image of God. He is given dominion over all the creatures, and he alone of them all has free will. He is the highest evolute of the absolute sentient power's will to develop vehicles which reflect itself to itself. Man has the capacity to become that perfect vehicle of the absolute will, which we call Resek. Christ, the Son of Man, says in the soliloquy from the cross again, that he is the sum of all men's efforts through time to reach the highest truth. He shows the men who come after how to attain the level of reflexive self-consciousness which brings the wheel of the tacit conspiracy full circle. Every human being, male and female, has within him or herself those functions of the absolute which are expressed in the tacit conspiracy. The initiating power of free spirit, the power to formulate or reason, the power to feel, and the substance or being which is the container of the absolute. Every man has a woman within him, his being. Every woman has an internal man. But in time, they tend to be stressed upon one or other of these pairs of functions of the absolute, so that in a tacit conspiracy of creation, they may, in relation, bring about more and more highly developed forms for the absolute will to self-objectification. This stress tendency in male or female tends to obscure the wholeness of the being. Thus the man tends to be stressed upon the attributes of the father, initiative and reason, whilst the woman tends to be stressed upon the mother's attributes of substantiality, or the conservation of values, and sentience. The movement away from the absolute, undifferentiated whole before creation to the many partial formulations which resulted from the tacit conspiracy, we call the fall, or the pall. Now the fall, or pall, is the darkness of inertic thinking, which results in a finite form which is wholly identified with itself as a part, and thus forgets the whole in which it has its being. This objectification with a given concept or form, a partial, makes it impossible for this partial being to observe itself from outside. It is inertic, it is in working. Its total self-identification makes it totally self-involved, and therefore convinced in its separateness. This is what has happened to man in his journey through time. He's identified with his rationality and powers of initiative to the exclusion of his sentient awareness of the whole. He regards woman as different from himself. By this stress on differentiation and separativity, he's lost his awareness of the tacit conspiracy. Woman has never made this mistake to the same extent, for she has her identification with the substance and with sentience, which is all-pervading, a continuum. And she is stressed on continuity rather than on separateness. So she is deeply aware in her feeling nature of the tacit conspiracy. But because of her part in it, she is unable to voice it to forgetful man. She's not allowed to voice, to explain, for explanation is a male attribute. Reason. From this forgetfulness of man about the meaning of the tacit conspiracy has resulted all the violence and error of the sex war. The purpose of the absolute sentient power in the tacit conspiracy is frustrated by man's partial nature and with his identification with his separateness. Instead of regarding woman as an essential partner in creation, man dominated her through his superior initiative and reason and treated her as a chattel. he sought fulfillment for his reasoning powers in the rediscovery of the secrets of nature, which his whole being once knew, but which had been buried in his separative drive. Yet he was only rediscovering what he already knew as a whole, internally polarized being, that all is the working of the tacit conspiracy in the world. Yet even his discovery of the wheel, the lever, the mechanical principles of positivity and negativity and their dynamic equivalence in electricity didn't lead him to link them in a unified and universal law of being. In the meantime, woman, aware in the depths of her being that the tacit conspiracy was not being properly expressed in their relation, grew darker and darker as the male concentration upon her was relaxed. And as the universe would disappear and its involved power return to the absolute if the father ceased to concentrate upon it, so woman tended to return to her absolute wholeness. And to counter this, her internal male, suppressed by the tacit conspiracy, came to the fore, and she, in her need to restate her value as a being, opposed man on his own ground of initiative and reason. She claimed equal rights with him. This has happened in various points in history, the most recent, of course, being the suffragette movement, which succeeded in showing the predominant male that woman was capable at need of doing work which had been man's preserve, and of using the reason which he hadn't credited her with possessing. Of course, we know that when she made her point, she again returned to her female stress, because the eye of the male was now upon her again. And this, in its turn, produced the so-called woman state in man, when, having been reluctantly forced to accept that his better half was in fact capable of reason, he found that once he'd accepted it, she was no longer using the reason she had persuaded him she had, at which he promptly relapsed into hysteria. We sometimes see this protest against the masculine element in the form of woman. Sometimes the lack of relation between husband and wife has led the wife to engram the product of this faulty relationship, say a girl child, with masculine qualities, like narrow hips and wide shoulders. This development in the female of male characteristics, together with the ability in the male to display hysterical emotion, proves that each being contains all the elements of the tacit conspiracy within his or her being. It's only in relation that the stress appears. In a group without males, one woman will assume the qualities of initiative and reason. She will take over the man's role. And in an all-male group, for instance in a prison camp, one male will inevitably begin to display female characteristics, because there has to be a tacit conspiracy. There has to be this stress on both poles of being in order that being can continue. It is said that all men are female to God, and whereas a man may be female in relation with a more powerful man, he's nevertheless male to a weaker man, or to a woman, and so on. There is a hierarchy in the tacit conspiracy. But it is in marriage that we see the conspiracy most clearly, or more nearly, we see where it should be at work, and more often than not, isn't. Marriage means the differentiation of the substance in a material situation. In other words, the relationship involved in marriage is a very good way for each partner to grow and to evolve new forms in the world of time. Marriage is the concrete expression of the original tacit conspiracy. Each partner evidences in himself or herself one half of the conspiracy in order to create between them new and more complex expressions of the absolute sentient power. But the tendency in time, as we've said before, is to become so identified with the partial self as to forget the whole purpose of the universe. There's a non-realization that the relation between male and female is really a triangular one, with God as the apex. His ultimate will must prevail, and it's along the gradients he sets up in the field that man and woman, at the other two corners, relate and move towards their destiny. For instance, man, who's committed internally to initiative and reason, also has his womanly aspect within him, which, when his powers of maleness are stretched, suggests that he might lack a rest. This is what he seeks in marriage, in fact, a rest from his labors. He wants to be soothed and comforted by the soft hand of his lady, the slippers by the fire routine. But this is a retrogressive step, and God has another purpose in mind. Woman, whose function originates in the creation of substance by the helical drive of the father, enjoys the sensation which the helical drive of the male gives her. She doesn't have to do anything except to be receptive in order to receive this pleasant sensation. So once she is initiated in this helical drive situation, she tends to move towards the economic relation of marriage. Economic because it seems that by the least energy expenditure, she may get the most sensational result. We've said that both poles of being, male and female, are in every being. But the woman has willfully preferred to stress the substance and the sentience aspects of her being. She relies, therefore, upon the external male stimulation to look after the initiating and reasoning which is necessary in the situation. All her appearance of reasonability before marriage is like a garment which she puts on to fascinate the man. She's not internally committed to the ideas she expresses, only willing to please him to get her will. So each partner, by stressing one aspect of being, dialectically brings into the situation the opposite pole to that which he or she has stressed. Dialectics is a fundamental part of the tacit conspiracy. But it would be a mistake to view this relationship of male-female in one human being as other than simultaneous. They're both in action in any given situation. If one sees a woman fooling about, formulating fantastic reasons why so-and-so should be done, one sees there a man, that is form, in a woman, that is will, trying to dominate the situation. This is why when a woman is defeated in a tension situation which she's trying to dominate, she'll quite often grin and just give up. She's aware that she's not committed to the ideas she's expressed. She's merely using them to get her own way. Her uncommitted will, when it's defeated with words, merely smiles and looks for another opportunity. Opportunism is essentially a female characteristic. On the other hand, a man whose reasons are shown to be inadequate, or who loses an argument through the superior logic of his opponent, will rarely laugh it off. He's been defeated in a sphere in which he is committed, namely the world of reason. The wound is therefore much deeper. He's been shown to be inadequate. The woman in similar case admits no such thing. Her substantial stress makes her much more tenacious. It's said that in marriage, the whip passes momentarily from hand to hand. That's a statement about the tacit conspiracy in action. At any one moment, the initiative rests in one or other of the partners. Whoever seizes it is the positive or male partner for that moment. It's the tendency of man in time to fix an idea and regard it as a rule. Thus, he observed that the male superiority in initiative power and reason made him a natural leader. Therefore, he supposed that man is born to be the leader and woman the follower. But we live in a dynamic universe, not a static one. One is only leading when one is leading. The title man, with the physical complement that accompanies it, doesn't mean one is the head of woman. She may prove in a given situation to be a better man than he is, and then she becomes the leader. Power is for him who uses it, and this is entirely an individual problem. This is why hereditary aristocracy as such is anachronistic in a time when growing awareness has shown that leadership is an individual matter. Gold is where you find it. But this may seem to say that marriage is a war. It is, because it's been turned into one by the identification of individuals with their own male or female functions to the exclusion of the whole concept of the polarized tacit conspiracy. Marriage, in its real meaning, is a stress relationship designed for the union of two beings who are born of the absolute sentient power and who have tacitly agreed to assume a polar relationship so that their coming together in that relationship may stimulate each to develop and grow and so fulfill the absolute's purpose in creating them. But neither man nor woman should ever forget that they are, each in themselves, a complete human being, capable at will of exerting the unific force of the tacit conspiracy within and internal to their own being. We said earlier that each man is a woman to God. The process of a human being in woman is woman, man, woman. By that, we mean that woman is the receptive vehicle of the Holy Spirit, who has to mobilize herself to express that spirit. Woman on the move is man, the evaluator of his own substance. But having learned all there is to know about reason, logic, and formal appreciation, he must then become the artist, in the sense of Jacob Burmer. That is to say, he must throw away his book, as did Prospero in The Tempest, and return to his inner spirit, whose vision is immediate and whose response in any situation is adequate to any demand. The true artist is one who creates from himself, because he recognizes the tacit conspiracy in its male-female aspects within his own polarized being, and thus he really and actually becomes a universe in himself, a self-stimulating, self-creating, self-mobilizing being.